We're now beginning a study of the 38th Psalm. The title of this psalm states that it is a psalm of David, and we have no reason to believe that David did not write this psalm, although we do not have any other proof that he's the author other than what the title says. The title also says that it is a psalm of David to bring to remembrance. The idea of bringing something to remembrance is one that is used frequently in the Bible. However, in this particular psalm, we do not know precisely what was intended to be remembered. Some think that this was a psalm in which David remembered his grievous sin that he committed with Bathsheba and the inflicted punishment that came upon him as a result of that. But we are not told that specifically. There can be no doubt that the psalm had this design of making a permanent record of an important event in the life of David or of his experience in a time of great calamity. There are no recorded events in the life of David to which this psalm would be particularly applicable, although in a life of trial and suffering, such as his was, there can be no doubt that there may have been many such occasions. What is known is that this psalm was written with reference to sickness of some kind, and also to the neglect and the cruel treatment which he received while he was in this time of sickness. We find that the 41st Psalm seems to have been written on a very similar occasion. And as we look at the book of Psalms in general and the purpose of Psalms, we find that in a revelation adapted to mankind, and one that is designed to be applicable in its instructions and promises to the various conditions in which men are placed on the earth, it was to be presumed that there would be a not unfrequent reference to the sickbed, to the trials on a couch of languishing. We find mankind frequently in this position. Many times, humans are sick, they're physically ill, or they're mentally distressed. They are placed into such a situation in which they are prostrate. They find themselves suffering, or in a condition of deep depression, or in a condition of grief. Maybe they're contemplating death. Maybe they have a condition that is threatening their very lives. Maybe they're contemplating the loss of their soul. Or maybe they are suffering over the similar condition of a loved one or a friend. And in an inspired book of devotion, like the book of Psalms is, which is designed to illustrate the nature of true religion, the nature of the spiritual condition of man in the various and diversified situations of life, the object of the revelation could not be fully accomplished without an illustration of the feelings of religion, the feelings of a true faith in the time of sickness and when the prospect of death comes. For such scenes must occur in the world, and it is eminently in such scenes that we desire to know what is the proper feeling to be cherished when we're children of God, what true religion is at such a time, and what it will do to sustain and to comfort the soul. So the book of Psalms, by its very nature, would have not been complete without such an illustration of the nature of true religion. So it was in every way probable that Psalms like this would be composed. And it was in every way improbable that no such psalm would be found in a book of inspired devotion. If we had this book of Psalms and no scene such as the one we're going to have in this 38th Psalm, it would not have been complete, because this situation is one that is found frequently in the humanity and in the very being in life upon this earth. So it is also very probable that the views expressed in this psalm then do not necessarily have to be made to apply to a particular affliction in the form of a sickness coming upon an individual, but they may also apply to a general calamity, a calamity coming upon a people, rather than a particular affliction in the form of a sickness coming upon an individual. So the great value of the book of Psalms consists in the fact that it furnishes illustrations of the nature and power of true religion in all the varied circumstances of the lives of individual friends of God. So, beginning with the first verse of the 38th Psalm, O Lord, rebuke me not in thy wrath, neither chasten me in thy hot displeasure. Now, this is a quotation of the first verse of the 6th Psalm. And he seems to be talking about the same thing here as he did there, and he's just using the very same words. And what he's saying is that he's asking God not to rebuke him in his wrath. And he's associating his present distress, his state of illness, his sickness, his problem, he's associating that with God giving him some rebuke because of his sins. He's connecting suffering with sin. He's connecting his disease with sin. And so for the Lord to rebuke him would be to reprove him, to call out the fact that he has been an offender, to make it known. And it primarily means to make it known with words, but it can also include the idea of making it known with some kind of actions. And of course, to bring suffering or disease upon him would be an action that certainly could make known the fact that God was very unhappy with his state, with his sinful life. He further says, neither chasten me in thy hot displeasure. And the word chasten means to punish. And hot displeasure would be the same as having wrath or anger, some kind of heated disposition, showing that God was most displeased, that he was in a state of hot displeasure. And so we can see then that the writer is picturing himself as receiving punishment from God because God is unhappy with his state. God is unhappy with his sins. And as we said, this seems to be a very definite idea of connecting sin with some kind of punishment. The disease that he had, the affliction that he had, was given by God because he was displeasing to God. And so he very definitely is giving the idea of connecting suffering with sin. Now this doesn't mean that it happens this way all the time. It doesn't mean every time a person gets sick it's because of sin. But it certainly does mean and strongly imply that this is one of the ways that God does work to bring about a chastening of those that have sinned, to bring about a correction in those who have displeased him and who need to make some changes. So when we do have reverses, when we do have sickness or disease, it is not improper to think about the fact that maybe this is God rebuking me. Maybe this is God showing me that I need to make some changes. Maybe this is the way that God is now chastening me for my bringing about his displeasure. So just as it was appropriate for David to think these thoughts in his time of distress, it's also appropriate for us to have the same thoughts. He further describes this affliction that he has, this chastening that he has in verse 2. He says, "For thine arrows stick fast in me, and thy hand presseth me sore." Now the word stick fast really means to come down upon me, and it carries the idea of piercing him deeply. The arrows are piercing his flesh deeply. This, of course, is figurative language. But whatever his affliction was could be figuratively described as an arrow that the Lord had shot at him, or arrows that he had shot at him, and these arrows were hitting the mark. They had pierced his flesh deeply, and they were sticking fast in him. He says, "And thy hand presseth me sore." The hand, of course, is that part of the body that can be used in bringing about affliction on someone else. And it's the same word as stick fast. It means to come down on me. Thy hand has come down on me, or it presseth me sore. I'm feeling the effects of your hand upon me, O God. And he is definitely reflecting the fact that this is God reacting to his state of sin. God is bringing about some kind of chastisement. God is demonstrating the fact that he is unhappy with the actions that the writer of this psalm has been carrying out. He further says in verse 3, "There is no soundness in my flesh because of thine anger, neither is there any rest in my bones because of my sin." Here he expresses the same idea in even more plain language. He says, "There is no soundness in my flesh because of thine anger." No soundness in my flesh would mean that he was wholly diseased. That whatever the affliction was, it quite possibly was some kind of a skin disease. And there was no part of his skin, no part of his flesh that was not affected by this. He was maybe breaking out in some kind of cutaneous eruptions that would cause his friends to want to shirk away from him, to cause him to have a lot of misery, a lot of discomfort, and certainly to be very apparently ill from some cause. And here he says that it's because of thine anger. He definitely connects it with the displeasure of God. God is angry with him, and this is what God has put upon him because of his anger. And of course, we're realizing that David's connecting this to a sin. He further says in this third verse, neither is there any rest in my bones because of my sin. Now, no rest in my bones. The word rest here means peace or a comfort or health. I do not have any peace. I do not have any comfort. I do not have any health in my bones. And of course, the bones is the structural part of the body. And not only is the skin affected now, but the inner part of my body is also affected. My bones are reflecting the sin that I'm having. I do not have any comfort in them. It's not just an outward pain, but it's also an inner pain that I'm having, to the point of my bones having this same discomfort. And it's he says, because of my sin. Now, we know that all sickness and all affliction is not because we have committed some individual sin. Although we can connect all affliction with man's general sin, man's fall from the Garden of Eden has brought him into this state of weakness and to the state in which he is susceptible to sickness and disease. And so it can be traced back to sin originally, but all sickness does not necessarily have to come from sin. But the fact that David makes it so clearly a cause and effect here, sin has caused his sickness, then we have to give strong thought to the fact that God does use sickness and disease as a means for punishment of sin. And so anytime we are afflicted with some kind of a disease, we need to give strong thought to the fact that this may be a chastisement of God. There may be a purpose in this for us to take some note of our actions and make a change. And that's the very idea that David is bringing about here. He says it very plainly. There's no rest in my bones because of my sin. Some kind of sin that David had done, something that had brought about the displeasure of God, had brought about this state of sickness and disease that his body was now racked with. He further says in verse 4, for mine iniquities are gone over mine head. As an heavy burden, they are too heavy for me. This phrase, for mine iniquities, really means my sins. His sins, his crimes against God, his disobedience to the law of God, had become so numerous that they had gone over his head. He's referring this to like being out in the ocean and the waves lapping up over his head so that he is no longer able to keep his head above the water. And the iniquities are this way. They had become so numerous. They stacked up so high until they now were covering him over. They were gone over his head. He is acknowledging the fact that he had many sins. He had enough in the way of sin here to completely cover him over. He further says, as an heavy burden, they're too heavy for me. It's as though they had been stacked upon his back and now they had crushed him down. He could not carry them any longer. They're too heavy for him. And this is a very accurate way to describe our sins. They are things that do engulf us. They will snuff out our spiritual life. They will cause our head to go under the water, so to speak. They will be so heavy that we cannot carry them. No man can stand upright with all these sins. No man can stand before God in a justified sense with his sins still upon him. He has to do something about his sins. He has to have his sins taken care of. And he has to be concerned about his sins. So as a heavy burden, they're too heavy for me. And he's connecting the fact now that because of his sins, God has brought this sickness upon him. God has brought this punishment upon him. And he bears this out in verse 5, where he says, my wounds stink. Now the wounds here, this word means welts or stripes, as though he had been beaten. And as though this beating that he'd had had brought about a breaking of the skin and a swelling and inflammation of the skin and a redness. And these then become his wounds. He says, my wounds stink. That is, they had gone to the point that they now were emitting a foul odor because of the injury and the infection that accompanied it. We get the idea of a sore that has maybe bloody corruption pouring forth from it. My wounds stink, and he says, and are corrupt. And the word corrupt means to melt or to melt with matter, so that there is something running forth from this wound and are corrupt because of my foolishness. And foolishness here means is folly or is sin. And certainly we have to realize that all sin is folly. All sin is foolishness. There is never any wisdom connected with sin. Sin is not a wise act. Sin is not a smart thing to do. Sin, although it may be brought about by peer pressure, it may be brought about by social influences. It may be something that the world looks upon as a great thing or a nice thing or a thing that's smart to do. It is always foolishness. It is always folly. And we have to expect sin to bring about these wounds, these stripes that God will inflict upon us if we're His. If we're His children, our sins are going to bring about some kind of stripes. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be physical in all cases. We can have mental wounds, mental stripes, mental discomfort inflicted upon us and still have the wounds that stink, still have these welts on our spiritual selves, on our souls, on our minds, on our hearts. And they can be of such a nature that we feel like that they are running with matter, that they are corrupt, that they are very grievous indeed. And it's because of our foolishness. Let us be most careful that we not act in a foolish way and do something that we are going to be sorry for later because it's sin. Any act of sin is an act of foolishness. It matters not how small or how great. If we know that it's something God doesn't want us to do, if we know that it's something that God is going to be unhappy with, if we know that it goes against any teaching, any law that God has given, then it's a very foolish thing to disobey that. To do that act is an act of folly. It is truly sin. And we can expect God to give forth His displeasure if He loves us. We can expect God to show that He is most displeased with it. And how else can He do it? He's already taught us. We already see the plain teaching in His Word, and we've gone against that. That hadn't been enough to change us. That hadn't been enough to keep us from it. So the next act then that God has is to bring some kind of personal wound or injury to us in the form of illness, disease, or mental anguish. And certainly, then we can begin to see that our iniquities have gone over our head, that our iniquities are like a heavy burden. They're too heavy for us. We cannot carry them. God will not let us have rest or peace in our bones. God will not let us have soundness in our flesh. He will stick His arrows in us. He will press heavily upon us with His hand. He will chasten us in His hot displeasure. We will be rebuked in His wrath. So it's enough to cause us to have a new concept of sin, of the terribleness of sin, and it's certain enough to make us want to avoid the foolish act of sinning. In verse 6, he describes his condition further. I am troubled. I am bowed down greatly. I go mourning all the day long. Now this word, I am troubled, really means to writhe with convulsions. Whatever his affliction was, he describing himself as being in a state of actually convulsing. I'm bowed down greatly. That is, I am bent over. I'm doubled up. I go mourning all the day long. To go mourning means that he is wearing the garments that a mourner would wear. He's in a state of mourning. He certainly is not in a happy state. He's not really proud of his sin now. Although the world may look upon it as a nice, chic thing to do, he's very ashamed of it. And to go mourning all the day long means he's in a constant state of mourning. He's in a constant state of unhappiness over this. This thing is something that's certainly gotten his attention. He is well aware of the fact that he's been displeasing to God, and he is certainly being chastised for it. And he's feeling the effects of it. This is not some little light thing that is just going to pass and he'll forget about it. He's definitely feeling the effects of this chastisement by God. In verse 7 he says, for my loins are filled with a loathsome disease, and there is no soundness in my flesh. The word here for loins means the area about the kidneys. And loathsome means some kind of a burning or an inflammation. So he's simply saying my loins are filled with a loathsome disease, or that is, I have a disease of the kidneys. And certainly this is the very seat of his illness, and it's a deep-seated illness. It's one that can affect his whole body in a very adverse way. To have an inflammation of the kidneys is certainly a bad condition to have. And he says, and there is no soundness in my flesh. That is, no part of my body is sound. I am wholly afflicted by this disease, by this condition. There is no place in my body that can be said to be well or to be whole. I am totally affected by this problem. And of course, he is to sit over and over, it's because of his sin. So we see then what a terrible condition sin can put us in. Physically, mentally, emotionally, we can be absolutely devastated because God will bring a punishment upon us because of our sin. This is one of the things that's very clearly recognized here, and we need to recognize this. And God does it for a purpose. It's so that we will make a correction of our sin, so that we'll come back to God and not be eternally lost. We're going to close our lesson at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.